You are listening to a sermon by Carl Brown, recorded on Sunday, November 17, 2013, at the Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You can't read this. It says, "My toys. Where are my toys? I can't do my job without my toys." I love toys. If you've ever been to my house, you'll know what I mean. My front room has, and this is no exaggeration, hundreds of toys on display. And I play with a lot of them. It's not like I buy toys all the time, just every once in a while. But they do add up, though, after six decades of buying toys every once in a while. And I've had a lot of fun with toys. And great success as well. I've paid off a couple of mortgages with income from toys that I've produced. And during my career as a college professor, I've often used toys to illustrate concepts and generate enthusiasm in lab experiments. For the past few years, though, every time I buy a toy, I ask myself two questions. One, where am I going to put it? And two, how does this toy change me? Now, please keep that last question in mind. How does this toy change me? What is a toy? Looking up in some dictionaries, I found that a toy is any item that can be used for play. Toys and play help us to learn about the world around us. In my search for a definition of toys, though, I didn't find any concept that a toy is a tool for shaping and changing people. So how do toys relate to change? Well, children use toys to play and help their bodies develop, discover their identity, learn cause and effect, understand relationships, and develop skills that they can use as adults. We've all seen children with toys. Similarly, adults use toys and play to form and strengthen social bonds, games, teach, learn, discover their identity, exercise their minds and bodies, understand relationships, practice their skills, just like children, and as decoration. Now, I'll be speaking about toys and their power in our society. In case you're thinking ahead of me, I won't be dwelling on the theme of violent toys. The last time I spoke here, the theme was guns, and I feel I've said enough about violence for a while. Also, don't expect to hear too much about Barbie. And she's just simply a product with so much baggage that it doesn't even fit into her dream house. We approach Christmas, and I have two concerns regarding this season. One, these days, Christmas has more to do with toys than it has to do with Christ. And two, as Christians, we're living in a society where non-Christians greatly outnumber us. So, how can we approach these two concerns? Well, let me get back to the concept that toys change us. The humble rubber ducky. I was very tempted to ask if we could sing Rubber Ducky today. Here he is. Mr. Duck. My granddaughter, Ellie, spends Fridays with me, and she's adopted my rubber ducky. This is now Ellie's Mr. Duck. Actually, it's pronounced duh. 13 months old. She's working on it. How does Mr. Duh change Ellie? Well, he helps her to understand cause and effect, squeeze makes squeak. He increases the muscles in her hands. He's not that easy to squeak. He increases their coordination of her little paws because she's got to move one set of one part of her hand this way and the other part that way. It's tough when you're 13 months old. And he helps her to conceptualize that some things are better to chew on than others. Mr. Ducky's much more satisfying to chew on than dust bunnies. That being said, there's a lot fewer dust bunnies in my house every time she leaves. Really fast, those 13-month-olds. And ethics. He squeaks, but some squeaks are funny, and happy squeaks, and some are sad. How can Ellie know this? Well, I tell her. And this is something adults do without thinking. But when Ellie gives little Mr. Dutta a squeak like this, everybody goes, "Oh, that's so cute. You know, oh, he's squeaking. Mr. Dutta squeaks." All right. What happens when she steps on him? It's easier to get him to squeak when she steps on him. What happens then is, instinctively, every adult puts on this pained expression and says, "Oh, poor Mr. Ducky, you're stepping on him." It just happens. All right. So by the time she's a few months older, she'll still be stepping on Mr. Ducky. But increasingly, she'll be doing it with a little guilty feeling. I'm not getting the same reaction here. You know, when I go like this, everybody thinks it's cute. When I go like this, they all go like that to me. Not good. All right. So, what does Mr. Ducky do? Well, a lot of things. Neurological training here. We're talking about changing her brain. In a few months, she's going to be feeling that she shouldn't step on Mr. Ducky. What's the lesson? You don't step on your friends. Or, from Proverbs, we might say as a Christian, respect others, restrain yourself from violence. Proverbs says, train the young in the way they should go. Even when they are old, they will not soar from it. So thank you for Mr. Ducky. To identify a toy, we talk about play. Now, I had originally wanted this talk to include thoughts on the Bible as a toy, but the concept expanded into something that began to have a life of its own, especially when I started to look at the Luther Bible, which was one of the biggest changes in all of European history, perhaps in the world's history. It just made the whole world go off at an angle. As a toy for adult learners, it was a model of gigantic proportions, so I'm going to save that one for another sermon. I'll just mention, though, that Bible wisdom focuses on teaching how to live, not how to obtain earthly skills, but how to live in this world. I would postulate simply that the Bible is a divine educational toy. But we'll leave that for another time. You probably all heard of the Montessori educational method. Maria Montessori, she's the founder of the Montessori educational method, and she calls play a child's work. She also describes it as purposeful activity. And she says, if play is the work of the child, toys are the tools. Now, what kind of tools are we as a society providing for our littlest workers then? What does our society sanction when it comes to toys and play for children? The Bible teaches us how to live. It gives us Christian values. And that's an important thing, the values here. So to paraphrase our reading from the Proverbs, which Jose gave us, I'll just paraphrase it, each verse, one sentence. Seek honesty and integrity. God made each of us. Avoid evil. Listen to God, your life will be better. There are those who would mislead you. Watch out. Training children results in good adults. Watch your spending, be fair, mind your temper, share. Avoid bad people, be honest and polite, work faithfully, and God will help. Now, these are values, and when I look at a toy, I wonder, what values does this toy teach? Okay, and how do you determine those values? You've got to remember, just like Mr. Ducky modifying my granddaughter's brain, he's much more pleasant to chew on than dust bunnies. All these little things you would never expect from a humble rubber duck. Let's look at an aspect of toys which is often considered but not really given the gravity that it should. And I'm talking about gender traits here. This is something that people are very curious about and very opinionated about. I'm just going to talk about observations. When eye movement is tracked in young infants by computers, infant girls, and we're talking infants not old enough to talk, infant girls show a visual preference for a doll over a toy truck. Interestingly, when eye movement is tracked in young infant boys by computers, the opposite is true. They'll prefer a truck over a doll. Now, this observation lets us know that even before any self-awareness of gender identity has emerged, children already prefer sex-typical toys. And in observing social play with toys, for example, a toy castle with horses and figurines of knights and so on, in observing children play with this kind of a toy, it's observed that boys create their dramas outside the castle and girls create their dramas inside the castle. Now, Judith Elaine Blakemore is a professor of psychology at Purdue University, Indiana. Her primary research interest is the development of gender roles. And while researching the toy market, she says, we found that girls' toys were associated with physical attractiveness, nurturing, and domestic skill, whereas boys' toys were rated as violent, competitive, exciting, and somewhat dangerous. But the toys rated as most likely to be educational and to develop children's physical, cognitive, artistic, and other skills were typically categorized as gender neutral or moderately masculine. We concluded that strongly gender-tight toys appear to be less supportive of optimal development than neutral or moderately gender-tight toys. So, gender-based toys focus on developing gender-specific traits. Instead of fostering creativity, social development, cause and effect, or, ironically, discovering one's own identity. Now, why am I talking about that specifically? Well, marketers, you all know that I have a fascination for marketing. Marketers employed by corporations don't really care to join into the discussion of nurture versus nature regarding gender behaviors and roles. They merely observe, take note, and exploit the behavior of small children. Now, I'm going to pick on Lego, because Lego has this wonderful identity. Lego started out as a toy to encourage creativity. You could build anything with Lego. And you could take a piece of Lego and do all kinds of stuff with it. And when Lego first came out, they had boxes with little pictures on it, you know, of things you could make. But it wasn't just, you know, build this and you're done, put it on your shelf. It was encouraged to take it apart, build something else. And Lego has a very good history. Its motto, started by its founder, it translates into something like, the best is never wasted on children. That's how Lego started out. One of the things that Lego did notice, though, was very few girls played with Lego. In other words, they were losing out on 50% of the toy market. Lego Friends series. It's a type of Lego designed to appeal primarily to girls. It was introduced last year in 2012. The theme includes mini doll figures. We've all seen little Lego figures, little blocks. However, in the Lego Friends series, these figures, which are about the same size as the traditional Lego figurine, are more detailed and realistic. The sets include figurines in pink and purple color schemes and depict scenes from suburban life. Each of the women figures comes with names, personalities, skills, jobs, interests, and favorite colors. The girls are nicely attired, they're a little smaller. They're shapely with attractive hair. The women have a discernibly feminine shape. And the boys are nicely attired, smiling, and rather androgynous. There are no men in this series. Now, this line of Lego was developed strictly through marketing's observation of specific traits exhibited by young girls. The Lego Friends version of Lego is one of the biggest successes in Lego's history. In the first year of introduction, it tripled sales to girls. It doubled the expectations of the marketers. It was 100% better than they thought it would ever be for generating money. It's a story of marketing success and a disaster for the creative aspects of Lego. When you look at these sets, you realize that the child can assemble the Lego unit in only one way. The set that comes with the boat, all you can build is the boat. The set with the car, all you can build is the car. You can't use your imagination. The child's imagination is imprisoned. No more the grand toy of the imagination. This Lego won't let you build a set any other way other than what the marketers dictated. And in an even more pernicious act, the child isn't even allowed to invent a personality for the figurines. The playing pieces. Each figurine comes with a predefined personality, life story, right down to the favorite color. If you can imagine this, all across the world, wherever Lego is sold, any little girl, you can parachute a little girl into some country, and she'll pick up this Lego and say, "Oh, I know what this one is." And that's all it will ever be. They can't imagine who it is and what they're doing. It's scripted. Zero individuality. Self-discovery, creative skills, and imagination not included in each set. Lego's success with this product line results from catering to gender roles. Catering to gender roles is not only cheap and easy marketing, it also creates poor quality toys. Now, poor quality in the sense that they lack the best things that toys should provide. Creativity, exercise for the imagination, and empowering social development. Lego used to be exciting enough in its original form, simply as a toy to inspire and teach creativity. My children had a great time with Lego. They never built what was on the picture in the box. And it never existed for more than 5 minutes. It was always destroyed and built in something else. They had a great time with it. But now, marketing. The mindless greed of the corporation has increased attractiveness and the sales of Lego, while at the same time reducing the very quality that made Lego such a success in the first place. And this is why I say that the quality is poor. It's not the industrial material that lacks quality. It's the properties intrinsic in the very purpose which toys are made for that are lacking. So, when we look at a toy, we're looking at a lot more. I mean, the rubber ducky, this is certainly not gender specific, but it teaches an awful lot. Right. So, if I look at Luke 17, 1-4, and summarize it, there will always be people who cause sin and suffering, and it is especially terrible when such people mislead little ones. Correct sinners and forgive them. Forgive everyone who repents of causing sin and suffering. Now, if Dr. Judith Blakemore and Signora Maria Montessori are correct, then it's nothing less than a sin to waste the work that a child spends her time in by providing her with misleading tools. Maria Montessori, quoting her, "Preventing conflicts is the work of politics. Establishing peace is the work of education." And yet, Lego, on the boy child side of its marketing efforts, is reducing the educational aspect of its product and making increasingly violent products. Go take a look at a Lego display and see how many things, how many little figurines have weapons now. Not only that, if you look at the figurines, there's always three guys who have smiles on their faces and they're in white, and three guys that are in black and they're all frowning and ugly. So they're selling enemies. They're selling violence. Who makes the toys that change us? I'm saying that we make those toys. Only a few generations ago, toys were manufactured by the child's parents. There was very little commercial manufacturing of toys. You probably remember some of that. In modern times, you may not actually fabricate the toys that you buy for others, but you cause them to be manufactured. And yes, we, the general public, do cause specific toys to be manufactured. The Barbie doll. The Barbie doll would not be manufactured today if people didn't buy it. I think most of us have noticed how easy it is to get people's eyes to glaze over when we start talking about putting Christ in our everyday lives. Proselytizing has not worn well in the light of TV evangelism these past few years. How do we spread our Christian values? Well, people vote with their values. If they value style, they spend their money and time on clothes and other adornment. If they value health, they are interested in expensive equipment and spend their time in herds of marathoners or herds of bicycles. It occurs to me that if we can nudge people's values towards those of Christianity, caring for others, renouncing violence, restraint for worldly goods, then we will be nudging them towards Christianity. So tell those who you know that you don't like violent or gender-specific toys. Now you know why. Marketing is very subtle, very powerful. And it's sophisticated and immoral. Amoral, actually. As an aside, one of my favorite books on marketing has got the title on it, "All Marketers Are Liars." Basically, marketing is uncaring of children and Christian values. Marketing provides many of the thorns and snares that we should watch for. And we should never, regardless of our age and position, neglect our duty to train the young in the way they should go. And when talking to others about our Christian values in regards to toy, remember, as in Proverbs 11, to be the person of winning speech. We're Christians. We're here to change the world. We might have to do it with toys.